So here we are back at the Le Show thing, and I have to warn you. Not that I'm gonna do a Rush Limbaugh on you or anything. Not that I ever would, but I have just a little. You know, there's this thing going around, and again, of course, I still have not. Every year I raise this question, I've not received credible, convincing evidence of why cold weather should be cold and flu season, or whether there's that much more traffic in humans coming from China, where supposedly the new flus always germinate, than, let's say, Australia or other southern hemisphere climes, where presumably the flu season would be our summer, so they could fly it right into us in summertime, where, you know, warm weather, usually that's what germs like, isn't it? I've done this before. Anyway, I have one of these bugs, and it's landed in my ear canals. So I'm not, you know, as I say, I'm not going to do a Rush Limbaugh and say, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot hear myself. All I can say is for the last 3 days, the world has sounded like a really bad Sears radio. You know that sound. So I just want to turn it down, but I can't because it's the world. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I promised you for weeks that we're going to round up stories of people's adventures with airline security. Today's the day. So grab your loved ones. I don't care what you do with them. Just grab your loved ones. But before that, Vice President Dick Cheney has reemerged just in time for the big buildup to the State of the Union address. Dick Cheney has reemerged. I guess they're redecorating the cave, and appeared all over the Sunday morning yak shows. And true to form, none of the tough, hard-boiled Washington press corps questioners asked. They all asked, "Well, are you going to make public the information that the Congress is seeking on the people you consulted and the advice they gave you in your energy task force?" Of course, the point of that is that Enron. Everybody suspects Enron ran the energy task force. The energy task force was a wholly owned subsidiary of Enron. Dick Cheney doesn't want to make that information public. He said on the Yak shows he will go to court to defend that position. The Congress's investigative arm, the GAO, said they'll go to court. So it's court. But nobody asked Dick, none of the hard-boiled, hard-bitten, tough-as-nails Washington interrogators asked Dick Cheney, how is this different from Hillary Clinton running a health care task force in secret that the Republicans pilloried Hillary, and made her release all that information? I'm going to go where Dick Cheney didn't need to go and guess, because he did drop a hint. He said that the legal justification for his position is that the GAO, the investigative arm of Congress, can investigate parts of the federal government that were created by statute, that is to say, agencies of government. But he said, I'm the vice president. I'm a constitutional officer. What I do can't be investigated by the GAO. I'm a creature of the Constitution. So my guess would be that had he been asked that question, how does this differ from Hillary, he would have said, well, there's nothing in the Constitution about the First Lady. Of course, she's not a creature of Congress either. But it may have been the great genius move of the early Bush administration to say, you know, let's not let Laura do this. Let's let Dick do this. That's just a guess because, as I say, nobody asked. Anyway, stay tuned. Adventures in Airline Security coming up. This is a good show for you guys in Philadelphia to have remembered to record it, because it's Hello, Welcome to the Show.
have met you in a place where we both belong. What if crying and holding on and flying on the ground is wrong? Then I'm sorry to let you down, but you're from my side of town and I miss you.
Some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together weather-wise. It's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together weather-wise. It's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
Well, you might want to think twice about that when you hear the stories to come on today's edition of Hello, Welcome to Le Show. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to Le Show. I'm Harry Shearer. welcoming you to it. What? I know, you know, maybe Mullah Omar just had this thing that I have. Because you wouldn't want to have music in your country if your ears felt like this. You wouldn't want to have people talking loud either, though. You wouldn't want to have muezzin calling people to prayer five times a day if your ears sounded like this. And, I don't mean to criticize the good people at Sears either. They make fine, fine radios. White House press... Oh, I'm listening to myself. It hurts. That's how bad it is. Ladies and gentlemen, you know people in radio love the sound of their own voices, and I would love it if somebody else were doing this show today. White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer told reporters this week he has learned of no new contacts between Enron executives and administration officials about the company's finances. Now listen, here's where the line is being drawn. Here's where the fence is being erected. And if you watched the real West Wing, you kind of saw Fleischer even admit that this was the game. Quote, Ari Fleischer, to reporters. Remember, on contacts, what I've always said is, I've done my best to answer questions about any contacts with Enron, about Enron's financial condition, or anything of that nature. I've always said there may be contacts with Enron about other topics. Unquote. Presumably he wouldn't be doing his best to answer those. So, that's the game. And as I said a couple weeks ago, right here on this broadcast, the story is not what happened when Enron went bad. The story is what happened when Enron was going good. That's where the tar is, baby. The Ukrainian company, now there were stories about outrage in New York over the fact that they're turning Ground Zero into a tourist attraction. What then? But here, ladies and gentlemen, for your edification, the Ukrainian company New Men Travel is launching an extreme tour of Chernobyl, site of the world's worst nuclear accident in 1986. It promises visitors radiation monitors, protective clothing, and a close-up view of the sarcophagus surrounding the wrecked reactor. You can also get to see the graveyard of vehicles contaminated during the cleanup, the abandoned company town of Pripyat, and a host of nuclear processing plants. Isn't Wink Martindale a host of nuclear processing plants these days? All this is for $460 if you take a private car and a personal English-speaking guide, maybe Nina, or $340 if you join a minibus tour. According to Dmitry Osika from New Men Travel, some people might like to touch the spot of one of the biggest ecological and human disasters. Radiation levels now are such that one short visit should not do any harm to a tourist, he says, although those taking the tour do so at their own risk. Of course, everything you do is at your own risk. Don't be misled. Life, ladies and gentlemen, is at your own risk. For example, actor Christopher Lloyd, known for his roles, has put his Hancock Park area home of 20 years on the market at $729,000. He plans to move out of the L.A. area. Chris, was it something I said? Is it anything I did? Anyway, we can keep you here because we you know, the community of the creative. Built in the 1920s, the house has two bedrooms and just under 2,000 square feet, plus a guest house, or, say it with me, in German, Gasthaus. The home has been a work in progress for Lloyd and architect for nearly as long as the actor has owned it. The two have worked on the compound inside and out, planting rare and exotic trees and plants in the yard and using coral, onyx, teak, and Brazilian woods in the interiors. Hope you didn't mess with the rainforest, babe. They installed such art pieces as an undulating ceramic counter said to resemble the works of Spanish architect Antonio Gaudi, whose work was characterized by a freedom of form and a multitude of colors. There's also a ceramic piece that runs up the wall and through four skylights in the kitchen. The guest house, master suite, and breakfast room have Spanish colonial and adobe influences. An adobe influence. Ladies and gentlemen, the kitchen has been updated, and there are five fireplaces, a solarium, a pool, a hot tub, a workshop, and a bonus room in the home. Wow. That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of stuff to have Spanish influences. And David Spade, who plays, has sold his six-bedroom, 5,300-square-foot Beverly Hills home for $3.4 million. He listed the home in October. He purchased a larger home with city views and a tennis court for about $4 million in December. Built in the 60s but remodeled in 1995, the one-story house he just sold is behind gates. Dave, come out behind the gates. Be with the peeps. And has a library, four fireplaces, and a courtyard leading to an entry galleria overlooking a garden and a pool. Built in the 70s, the two-story house he bought has three bedrooms and 6,700-plus square feet. His new home is also behind gates and has a pool. So how many square feet? He lost 5,300 square feet. He got 6,700 square feet. Yeah, that was a good idea, Dave. I know, you asked me. Sylvester Stallone would love to bring Rocky and Rambo back to the silver screen, but at the age of 55, the Hollywood star fears his chances are slim. It's unlikely either my Rocky or my Rambo picture will get made, he told a trashy British newspaper. Stallone confirmed he'd approached Hollywood studios about reviving Rambo and said, what I did suggest was to have Rambo go into Afghanistan and rescue five girls. Sure, why would Rambo rescue guys when he could rescue five girls? It would have been too much to have Rambo go in and kill Osama bin Laden, I suppose. It would be an insult to every military guy. This time I don't see Rambo going in alone. But not to bring back five girls. He needs some help for that. Maybe somebody just to drive the vehicle. His other great ambition is to film Rocky VI. I would love to have one more shot at getting that right, he says. Even if people say I'm a little old for it. A little old for it. Yeah, he's not a little old for it. How back to normal are we, ladies and gentlemen? The question arises from time to time. Less than 5 months after the thing, a backlash of venomous emails and begrudging attitudes is hitting families of the victims of the attacks. This new negativity appears to stem from media reports of how much money families may receive from a federal compensation funds, which itself has prompted complaints that families won't be compensated equitably. Steve Push, treasurer of the organization Families of September 11th, said Friday his group has received 30 vitriolic email messages. Every time I go on TV or I'm quoted in the press, I get a handful of emails saying, Steve Push, you greedy, blah, blah, blah. You should rot in hell, he said. Push's wife was on the hijacked jet that crashed into the Pentagon. Kenneth Feinberg, the fund's special master, has estimated that average payments will be $1.65 million per family. The average compensation figure does not take into account the deductions of so-called collateral offsets, life insurance, pension benefits, Social Security. Those deductions are likely to greatly reduce the average payment for some families. The backlash against victim families also comes out in more than 2,000 letters and emails filed with the Department of Justice during a public comment period on the compensation fund. Mr. Feinberg, addressed to the head of the fund, you can't give in to these greedy people, says one message, purportedly from an ex-wife of a victim who complained the victim's new wife would get too much money. Enough is enough. Stick to your guns. Another critic wrote, it makes me sick to think that all these great men and women who are just doing their jobs are being remembered by greedy family members trying to get paid for their death. Push said complaints about the compensation plan by his group and others seem to have promoted the backlash. When people think we're going to get $1.6 million and we're still complaining, they think we must be greedy. What they don't realize is that many families are going to get much less, he says. The typical victim is a widow at home with two young children who's been out of the labor market for 5 years, says Push. She's going to be lucky if she has $40,000 a year to spend. Why should she have to sell the house and move into an apartment in order to subsidize the airline industry? The compensation plan, part of an airline bailout package passed by Congress, was created largely to shield the airlines from lawsuits. Feinberg will release the plan, the final version of the plan next month. He says, I think the backlash is extremely unfortunate. But it's normal. That's my point. I'm not judging fortunate or unfortunate. That's a value. It's just normal. More normal? The New York Post, owned by Rupert Murdoch, I have to point that out in front, says Michael Ovitz is a deadbeat donator. UCLA officials confirmed to the New York Post that Michael Ovitz, once the most powerful agent in show business, still hasn't made good on his much-ballyhooed 1997 pledge of $25 million to help rebuild the earthquake-damaged UCLA Medical Center. At the time, it was the second-largest pledge ever made to the university and propelled Ovitz onto Fortune magazine's list of the 40 most generous Americans. He was number 22. UCLA Provost Gerald Levy acknowledged the pledge remains unpaid. He's made payments towards his pledge. We have a policy of not going into the specific number of payments. We have every expectation that the pledge will be fulfilled. Ovitz was interviewed Wednesday of the last week by Charlie Rose. He referred four times to his support for the UCLA hospital and boasted about having enormous wealth even before Walt Disney paid him $90 million to go away. The pledge has not been correct. That is, has not been fulfilled. That is correct, says UCLA's Associate Vice Chancellor for Development. It's our distinct hope and expectation that Mr. Ovitz will pay his pledge. Ovitz is having ongoing discussions about his pledge with Levy. The university is frustrated by Ovitz's delays and now despairs of ever being fully paid, according to a UCLA source, but made a decision not to go public with the news of Ovitz's unfulfilled obligation. The school counted Ovitz's pledge when it announced 2 years ago that its fundraising goal had been reached. UCLA has, according to the New York Post, has a well-earned reputation for playing rough with deadbeat donors. 1 year when a family didn't make good on its pledge after the university named an area of the campus after them, UCLA held a public renaming ceremony. What makes the situation awkward is that Ovitz is a UCLA alum. That's what makes it awkward. Okay. Me, I would have thought, and finally, at the top of the week's news, ladies and gentlemen, Aston Martin, the car manufacturer renowned for its glamorous James Bond image, is going to stop selling sex and bondage accessories after incurring the wrath of the company's straight-laced United States owners. Silver handcuff key rings, leather underwear, and a handcuff buckle belt were included in a gift catalog launched by Aston Martin shortly before Christmas in an attempt to sharpen its image. Wanted a sharper image. Aston Martin took its James Bond image too far for Edsel Ford, one of the Fords. Suede boxer shorts and dumbbells also featured between pictures of scantily clad models in the brochure sent to 3,800 Aston Martin owners worldwide. The catalog is going to be reprinted with all the racy items removed after management at Ford complained about the content. Ford is Aston Martin's parent company. Was taken over by Ford in 1987. The opposition was led by Edsel Ford, a member of the firm's founding family, who was among those receiving a catalog. A staunch supporter of family values and a regular churchgoer, Ford was said to be outraged by the salacious nature of the merchandise and demanded that the offending products be removed. Among the items to be removed from the revised catalog, a silver handcuff buckle leather belt, which cost $1,000, and perforated leather boxing shorts, on sale for $600. The handcuff key rings, $200, are also being dropped. One executive said the decision represented a victory for, quote, a very blue-collar conservative car maker from Michigan over Aston Martin's British management, which was seeking to promote a forward-looking worldwide brand, which would appeal to the modern man and woman. Said one spokesman for Aston Martin, we had a very positive response to the catalog, particularly from fashion magazines, who liked the clothing, the cufflinks, and some of the other items. But we were always intending to reevaluate the merchandise, and there will be some changes. There won't be any exposed flesh, apart from a shot of somebody's wrist. Ford's Premier Automotive Group, which manages Ford's luxury car brands, was seeking to expand merchandising. The Aston Martin catalog was the first of its type. It was intended to spearhead the new merchandising drive, offering 60 products which were designed to attract new buyers with a combination of glamorous design and the Aston Martin name. The revised merchandise range will contain 20 new items, pens, briefcases. But no kinky items, thanks to Edsel Ford, ladies and gentlemen. Edsel Ford is cleaning up the Aston Martin catalog for your viewing pleasure. We'll be right back.
insinuations can lead to discontent. And you'll wake up some morning and wonder where I went. Instead of sneaking round looking for some food, why don't you ask me and I'll tell you the truth. You don't need a talking pillow, a lamp to shed some light, someone to come forward and testify. I can get a witness, there ain't no doubt at all, but you might have to help me catch that fly on the wall. Fly on the wall, fly on the wall, you might have to help me catch that fly on the wall. A strong foundation is always built on trust. False accusations could put an end to us. Once it gets started, the rumor's gonna grow, just like a raging fire out of our control. You better take a look at who you're talking to. Don't try to start a fight, you know you're gonna lose. You don't need a talking pillow, a lamp to shed some light, someone to come forward and testify.
Los Angeles tonight, will be here all week on Friday night for the first time on television. My favorite waitress, Trudy, from the morning shift at Nate and Al's, and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. Right now we welcome back to Larry King Live a young performer who's had great success as part of the boy band Boys Are Us. He's now out on his own. Tonight he joins us. He's not talking about Elian Gonzalez for the aftermath of 9/11, tonight he's talking about something a little closer to his heart. He's here in our Los Angeles studio, Dewey Gordon. Dewey, how you doing?
Mr. King, I'm doing great. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
That's kind of my job. Dewey,
yeah.
Dewey, last time we saw you, you were about to release a record.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Your Flag, your own response to the tragic events in New York and elsewhere?
That's right, and you were kind enough to to let me perform it right here in this program.
That was when we were closing every night with a song out of respect. But it's a new year, and now we're showing our respect by returning to normal programming.
Well, because if you don't, then the terrorists win.
You got it. So the record came out. Dewey, how's it doing?
Well, no, sir. It didn't come out much as I loved that song. And my wonderful managers at Mammoth Talent and all my crew over at Middle Finger Records, it just didn't seem to fit into my career path to actually put the record out since we were just beginning to launch into something much bigger, and I have to be honest with you, Mr. King, even more exciting than just having the fifth or sixth hit song on the patriotism bandwagon.
Well, Dewey,
but don't get me wrong, you know, there's no better bandwagon.
No, it's the best.
But you know, it's always been a goal of the Dewey Gordon career, and not to be a follower.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, after all, Boys R Us was actually the first boys band to actually put the word boys in our name. So
Dewey, what's the new career path? You getting into movies or what?
Mr. King, as you know, there was an awful lot of publicity about Virgin Records paying Miss Mariah Carey a lot of money not to make the next four albums for them.
Yeah, over $20 million or something.
Well, we went to the people at Middle Finger, who have been having their own problems.
It's the great Neil Glazer. His merger with Megalith got stalled in Europe.
That's right. And anyway, we said, hey, look, we've got a 7-record deal. What's it worth to you folks for me to not put out the next 7 records on your label? And, you know, I don't want to violate confidences or toot my own shoulder or anything, but we believe that the Dewey Gordon deal to not do the next 7 records may be the richest contract for the non-performance of services in the history of the entertainment business.
Wow.
And as I say, Larry, we don't want to talk numbers. You know, you yourself know how tricky that is with numbers and contracts and everything.
I know. If you believe the tabloids, I'm getting paid enough to buy Ted Turner. Dewey.
Yeah.
It's an old story to those of us who get free tickets in the sports world. Coaches often get paid not to coach. Mike Ovitz got paid something like $90 million not to run Disney anymore.
Yes, sir, and that's, it's kind of the argument we made, that it's just time for the artist to be involved in the likely avoidance of loss. You know, I took 2 years of biz ed at Cal State LA before starting the band, so, you know, this water I feel comfortable swimming in.
Well, you still don't want to pee in it.
No, sir, you don't.
So, Dewey, I guess with all the time you're not going to be spending in the studio, because you were known as something of a stickler anyway, weren't you?
That's right, Mr. King. Yep. You know, I'll spend a lot of time in the studio until something's absolutely right. You know, we took over a year to record my last hit, Too Much Love, which is exactly why we thought this deal made so much sense for everyone concerned.
Okay, but so are you going to use some of that time to do more concerts, more personal appearances?
I'd sure love to. I mean, after all, that's the greatest thing to me about the business I'm in. It's making contact with the fans, hanging out with the fans, seeing the fans.
So you don't agree with Mariah Carey about needing to escape from your public?
You know, when she said that, she was having other problems, and I think she just felt like she had to take it out for a minute on the kids who make all of this possible. But no, in answer to your question, Mr. King.
All right.
We're actually right now in discussions with the promoters who had a contract for our shows over the next couple of years. We're testing the market for the value of me actually not going out on tour for a while.
Okay, so that would free you up to pursue what, a movie career?
Yes, sir. Based on what happened to my first movie, Dead Man's Nerve.
When did that come out anyway, Dewey?
It went direct to video, Larry. We wanted the fans to have it in their homes just as soon as possible.
Sure.
Anyway, based on that track record, we've got a couple of studios dickering for a 3-picture deal.
Oh, that's great. And you would?
I would not star or direct
or
even come near the set. So we're very excited, Larry, because while Mariah Carey is going to carry on being in films, it looks like a little while longer, we think Dewey Gordon may be the first What my publicity people are wanting to call the first Renaissance non-performer. You know, paid very well to not work in several different media.
Dewey, I'm happy for you, but we and the fans are going to miss you.
Well,
and if You know, if the strain of not singing and not acting gets too great and you want to quit...
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. King. I really do. It's a new arena for me, and I guess we're just, you know, just going to take it a couple million at a time.
The great Dewey Gordon, making what may be his last appearance on Larry King Live for a while.
Well, I don't know. What's it worth to you?
Tomorrow night, Eileen Napolitano, whose husband divorced her after winning the lottery, and Hosni Mubarak, the president of Egypt, from Los Angeles. Good night.
Cidade nasce no fundo do rio, sou um peixe arredio, caranguejo, siri, tacari, bariri, meu pé pisou muito barro, mas tirei muito sal, com a mãe do Amauri, bem perto dali, no Andaraí. E nos domingos de Ramos fui eu, sou mais eu, boia de pneu, uma irmã do Aristeu, que prenhas e penhas, subindo vai vem, na linha do trem. Rio de Janeiro, Rio Pagodeiro, tem cidade, minha alma canta um pagode, mas o catade não pode cantar nesse bar. Seu Manel, que é? Virgem Maria da Graça, me beija, me abraça, mas não quer me dar. Se namorar é pra casar, é muita areia pro meu caminhão. Mas que suspensão, ai meu som, Cosme Damião, me leva contigo de Kombi ou de van. Pro Maracanã, Rio de Janeiro, Rio Cascateiro, Rio do Funkeiro.
Me casei com essa cidade bonitinha, sobrinha neta de Estácio de Sá, filha de Cunhambê. Baby, 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 oh, I love you. Mas o meu samba não é de bambu. Um pão mais quente pra chuchu, minha moça bonita.
Rio de Janeiro, Rio Bandoleiro, boa cidade.
O corpo do rio se divide em mar, montanha, floresta e algumas, digamos, cascatas. Mas tem uma coisa: a alma é uma só. Nenhum túnel ou via expressa pode dividir essa alma em duas.
Rio de Janeiro, Rio Cascateiro, Rio do Funkeiro. Me casei com essa cidade bonitinha, sobrinha neta de Estácio de Sá, filha de Cunhambê. Baby, 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 I love you. Mas o meu samba não é de bambu. O bairro com mais quente pra chuchu, minha moça bonita. Vou pro Lago do Tanque, lá tem baile funk, tudo sangue bom, não tem alemão.
I think what got Edsel Ford particularly upset was that when they had the detainees in Guantanamo pose in the handcuffs, that just struck him the wrong way. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Tales of Airport Security. These are from listeners, and unfortunately, we don't have people with bad voices, nasal inflections to read them, like the successful NPR shows do, so I'm going to have to read them. This is from KGB, not the radio station. The metal detector beeped as I walked through it at Midway Airport in Chicago yesterday. Not unusual, my belt buckle sets it off about 50% of the time. I was waved aside to be wanded. I stood there for a moment, ignored, while the private security person doing the wanding leisurely discussed her break schedule with a coworker. When she finally started, I noticed something unusual. Her wand was silent. It passed over my watch. Nothing. My rings. Nothing. My belt buckle. Nothing. Okay, she said, waving me on. Puzzled, I asked her, is that thing working? She looked at the wand. She made an adjustment. It began beeping. Guess it works better when it's on, huh? All right, that's one wisecrack that didn't get penalized. But we move on. The other day I was leaving my home airport, Palm Springs, having arrived the ridiculous 2 hours early. Flight takes only 45 minutes, as prescribed by Alaska Airlines. The folks right in front of me, self-assured and dripping with leisure time, said to the people screening bags, "Can you hurry this up, please? We're going to miss our flight." Needless to say, they were whisked through while I was strip-searched. It's from Dave in Palm Springs. Dear Harry, I flew to Italy in October and to New York in December. I wear a removable leg brace which sets off metal detectors, although it should be worn against my skin. I wear it over my clothes when flying to minimize problems. October 4, San Francisco to Rome, stopping in Paris. Then Venice to San Francisco through Paris. The personnel of both Air France and Charles de Gaulle Airport appeared to take security seriously. I got the feeling that when the Air France rep asked the check-in question, she really wanted to know if the maid packed your bags while you were in the sauna, or if your new boyfriend gave you this unmarked package to bring back. They did thorough seat checks before every takeoff. They were professional without being overbearing and couldn't have been more courteous. When my brace set off the alarm in San Francisco, the airport folks gave me a friendly wanding, no pat-down, and sent me on my way. In Paris, they called the supervisor while remaining friendly. When I offered to take the brace off and put it through the scanner, they were satisfied and sent me along. Arriving in Rome, no one looked to see that I was picking up my own baggage, nor was anyone the slightest bit interested in looking at my passport. The Venice airport was a very low-key, relaxed place. Now, December 21st, Oakland to New York, and New York to Oakland. The airline personnel was just as efficient and pleasant as they'd been the last time I flew with this airline, JetBlue. The airport employees were another matter. Where my brace set off the alarm and I offered to take it off, they refused my offer. When I was ordered to walk a distance from my already scanned carry-on baggage to get a pat-down, a man in desert camouflage with a very big gun snidely dismissed my concerns about my bag being out of my sight. I've had pat-downs before, but this was the first time it felt like a violation. When a foil gum wrapper in the money belt under my clothes said something buzzing, I had to take that off too. While waiting for my plane, beyond the screening area, I saw two security officers wrestle a very young woman with a big stuffed animal to the ground when it appeared they didn't like her attitude. Most onlookers laughed or appeared amused. On my return to JFK, I was determined to avoid being molested a second time. I put all keys, foil, etc. in my carry-on bag. I took my brace off. I carefully checked my clothes for metallic threads. I didn't go off, but my bag did. I was ignored when I asked for my bag, as well as when I asked what's going on. Now I was told to sit down. My carry-on bag was then gingerly but clumsily searched with rubber gloves. My apartment and mailbox keys seemed to be the suspected terror implement. Can't they see keys in the scanner? Now that the problem was solved, the guilty keys were set aside. If I hadn't been paying close attention, they would have been lost. I had the opportunity to be searched by East German border guards on a number of occasions. While those fellows didn't smile much, they put as much care into replacing items into bags that they had shown and taking them out and inspecting them. I always felt that I was being treated professionally. While all that was annoying and disagreeable, the really frightening thing was that both JFK and Oakland airports were filled with desert camouflage guys with very big guns hanging across their backs. They all maintained, well, these big, afraid of the National Guard. Lee from Berkeley. Harry, this is Marlon writing this. My girlfriend's blue-eyed blonde 17-year-old son had no ID when he tried to board a flight from Seattle to Yakima, so they yanked him out of line. They patted him down, ran a wand over him several times, and searched his carry-on. over his Thanksgiving weekend. His mom, thinking he might get hungry, had packed a piece of pumpkin pie in his carry-on. He was not allowed to board the plane unless he would take two bites of the pie and swallow it while they watched. Second item, a local elderly woman with a heart condition was not allowed to take her medicine on the plane because it was nitroglycerin. This from Ken in Wales. I went back to the States for the holidays and had the misfortune of having to go land in Orlando. Do not land at Orlando Airport. It took me an hour 45 minutes to get from the plane to the parking lot. Part of it is the customs thing, but at Orlando, they have something special. After you disembark and wait for your bags before customs, you're forced to recheck your bags for the trip from the customs area to the terminal. Then you have to wait in line to go through a security screening as you exit. I found this very frustrating, asked a woman in uniform and wearing a badge why it was necessary. She told me to ask a security guard. So I found another woman in a uniform and a badge, and she said it was because people were coming off the planes with banned articles, dangerous nail clippers and such. I asked the obvious question, why people weren't screened as they got on, and she told me that the articles could be passed to someone else who was about to get on a plane. It's because disembarking passengers mix with embarking ones after the security checkpoint in Orlando. Again, I asked why people weren't just screened as they got on, because it was ridiculous to be screened getting off a plane. I had the same experience. They were doing this in Los Angeles. This is me talking. A friend, this is Al, a friend had just flown back into town on New Year's Eve, said a friend was carrying a hip flask. The flask was detected at the airport security checkpoint. The person paid to stand at the security checkpoint asked what was in the flask. Whiskey was the response. The person at the checkpoint next asked, will you drink some of it? Yes, was the response. Flew back to Santa Monica for the holidays through Paris while being hustled through all the security checks. I couldn't help noticing that, being France, all the security personnel appear to be Algerians. Outward bound, the female inspector at LAX assured me, I'm going to pat you now, but I won't touch you. And finally, on a December 22nd plane trip to Dallas, my husband and I were not only pulled out of line for a complete search of our persons and carry-ons as we boarded in Burbank, but also when we changed planes in Vegas, even though our tickets had some code that could be read by airline personnel showing that we had already undergone. Let's get the people with nasal inflections to read this. Showing we'd already undergone a complete search. Same thing happened when we changed in Austin. Since this was post-shoe bomb, they now had to check our shoes as well. Luckily, I'd anticipated and worn clogs. The security person picked up some guy's loafer and started vigorously twisting at the heel, saying, I sure hope there ain't a bomb in this. I said, you and me both, buddy. This, of course, labeled me to the others in line to have their shoe heels twisted as a bad sport. And I got an overly cheery response from some citizen who quipped, well, at least we don't have to strip to our underwear. I set off the metal detector in Dallas Love Field. I'd forgotten to take the metal-framed sunglasses off my head. I put my hand on my head to take them off while simultaneously stepping back through the detector, and the security person screamed, hold it, do not move, do not step back through. I was startled, but I complied and underwent a complete pat-down and a complete search of all four carry-on pieces that belonged to my husband and me. He had made it through the checkpoint unscathed and was waiting for me. When I was finished, I signaled to him to help me with the luggage, and he stepped back into the checkpoint. Let me make clear that the checkpoint and non-checkpoint areas were clearly delineated by an invisible line on the carpet. At that point, a National Guardsman assigned to guard the checkpoint stepped forward with his finger on the trigger of his M16 and shouted at my husband not to re-enter the checkpoint area. My husband and I are not sure why we were flagged as security risks. We were pulled out for complete searches, a total of four times. And since we were flying on Southwest, even though we had low numbers, we were the last to board. Don't take edibles with you on planes anymore, ladies and gentlemen, unless you want to sample them at the checkpoint. And good flying.
Let us cheer the weary traveler. Let us cheer the weary traveler. Let us cheer the weary traveler along the heavenly road. Let us cheer the weary traveler. Let us cheer the weary traveler along the heavenly road.
Well, I saw a weary traveler. His head was bending low. I saw him again in the evening. He was crossing the veil below.
Well, check out the very traveler, little children.
Along the heavenly road, I said, hi there, brother traveler. Pray tell me where you're bound. Pray tell me why you're traveling on this enchanted ground.
Well,
he said, I started for heaven, to Zion land I'm bound. If the Holy Ghost will help me, I will not turn around.
Well, cheer the traveler, little cheer the traveler, little cheer the traveler, along the heavenly road.
Then he took his gospel trumpet, and he began to blow. He said, if God Almighty will help me, I'll know wherever I go. Lord, children. Hallelujah. Let the Lord just move, let the Spirit move. Boy, Deke, will you take up the collection while the choir's amulating? Yeah, man.
And cheer the weary traveler along the heavenly road. Let us cheer the weary traveler, let us cheer the weary traveler, let us cheer the weary traveler along the heavenly road.
My thanks to everybody who contributed their stories of fun with airport security. And if you want to contribute, you still can. Lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Don't attach anything, because it'll go in the trash. Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of trash, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over those of these same stations, which remember to plug in. Over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave WBCQ the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around North America on XM satellite radio, and on your computer around the world, wherever you want it, and whenever you want it, at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like having trained personnel at all important junctures, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Oh, by the way, my bad. Last week, I neglected to mention at just this point, you know, because I was plotting my departure, that the role of John Walker Lind on last week's show was created and performed by Tom Leopold. And he is trained personnel. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.